Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle, powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. When it comes to parents in our programs, most coaches are frustrated dealing with difficult parents or handling stressful parent situations, but today we share solutions and tools you can use to lead parents better and have a more fulfilling coaching experience. Before we start, a quick word from Manawata.
Coach, would you like to have a team full of great shooters next season? We've partnered with our friends at NOAA to bring to you the Hoops app, a free app to help your players measure the trajectory and arc of their shot. They'll get immediate feedback after every make or miss so that they can course correct and become a better shooter faster. Have your players download the Hoops app at thehoopsapp.com/PGC today so that you can have a team full of better shooters next season.
All right, coaches, welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. We're going to talk parents today. Listen, let's just be honest about this. I think this is one that probably can go a lot of different ways and people have a lot of different thoughts and ideas around. But the one thing I don't think we can avoid anymore is that parents are a part of our program. You know, I think that, you know, whether they're a good part of our program, a bad part of our program, just kind of a neutral part of our program, they are a part of our program. I'm talking to more and more coaches on a daily basis that are dealing with parent problems, parent issues, and it's making their life hard. I mean, the life of a coach is complicated enough, but I think the growth of involvement of parents is only making life a little bit harder for coaches. And, you know, look, I've been that parent. I've been on both ends of it where, you know, one, you want what's best for your kid, you know, and not every coach knows your kid like you know your kid, but at the same time, your kid is a part of something bigger than themselves. They're a part of the team. And there's some sacrifices they got to make. And it is a complicated conversation that me and Sam and Lisa are going to have. And so, Sam, let me start with you, as I know I've seen you deal with parents firsthand, being a part of BCB and having a child play BCB. And the way that you send out videos, the way you talk to parents, the way that we address parents, I know that you have a lot of thoughts and ideas, and I know they've morphed over the years, but why don't you kick us off on where do we start here in developing our philosophy to parents?
Yeah, let me give four thoughts to start us off, which is, you know, one, I think coaches need to first start with the right mindset and mind frame. And that's, you know, what is this about? Why does this matter? And how do we win with parents? And it matters because you're coaching a player, which is their child. And we're trying to help that child and that player become the best version of themselves as a player, as a person. And so as a transformational coach, that's why it matters, number one. And if parents are a big part of it, like you said, TJ, then we need to be in this together. Number two, you know, and not this isn't in this particular order. Number two is you got to establish some healthy boundaries and healthy expectations. The third thing is always explain the why. Always give the why behind the what. So when you deliver a parent meeting or you're having a communication with an email or a video you send out, the more you can share the why behind the what, I think the better chance it will be received rather than just delivering off some bullet point talking points that have no meaning behind it. And then the fourth thing is, you know, I try to take this approach, which is not coming from an expert in the room, is more as an information giver. And so I could go a lot deeper, which I think we will here in a second, but I think those are things that jump out right away. And we just, you know, as you know, TJ, we just created this whole leadership journey for coaches within PGC coaching, where we unpacked a lot of these things too.
Yeah, Sam, I watched you unpack that and you did a great job with that. Really thorough and thought out thoughts. And I think that whether we want to or we don't want to, coaches are having to now think through this issue. You know, what do I do in this scenario? How do I handle this scenario? I mean, being real about it, coaches are losing jobs because of parents, right? And I'm not saying they shouldn't sometimes, but they're also, I know some that probably are losing jobs that I don't think should be losing jobs because of dumb parent complaints. At least I know you jumped in it. At the college level, we probably deal with it a little bit less. I mean, we have involved parents and we want parents, you know, to know what's going on with their child and stuff like that. But this year you had the opportunity to coach at in the middle school level. And I know you probably had some more experiences with parents. Can you talk about those for a second?
Yeah, I was, you know, excited to be at a different level and thought, you know, the most important thing is that the parents know what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I tried to, you know, communicate mostly just via email, and some, you know, parents would come and watch practice, which, you know, that was fairly new because, you know, practice is only an hour. And so they'd come in and watch. And for the most part, they were really positive and encouraging. And then during the games, it's almost like they morph into a different person. Some of them are super active. Some of them you've never met before, and you're figuring out who's, you know, the mom or the dad of certain players. And so it was just interesting to be on the side of it where, especially when you're, you know, you're in a game and you're coaching and they're across the way from you. So in our situation, nobody sat behind us, but all the parents were, you know, you're looking at them. And a lot of times as a college coach, I never noticed the crazy parents in the stands. I'd hear about it after. I was able to like blur it out, but in those little gyms, you know, maybe even in high school, it's just, it's so in your face how much parents can be focused on the results or focused on a certain play or into the game, and even coaching their kids or saying things that they shouldn't be doing. My husband was sitting with one of the parents. I think they would allow me to say this, but we were running a play and my husband was sitting there being like, yeah, the dad's telling him to do something that's, I know, is incorrect based on how you're coaching him. And so it's funny that they can't help themselves. And I think that that's one thing, you know, as we talk about this, is just how can we help parents, or at least just giving them the opportunity to get on the same page with us and communicate as much as we can, because some of them want to do the right thing. Some of them want to be supportive, but they need to be taught or showed and modeled the way. And hopefully we can develop that with our parents in our programs.
Let me flip this for a second and be the parent and what it feels like to be a parent, because I think a lot of times coaches don't necessarily put themselves in the shoes of a parent. And look, I'm going to be honest with you. I think you're right, Lisa. There are some parents out there that want to do it right. They want to support the kid. They want to help them. And then there's some that are just completely attached to, like, if my kid does well, like I've done well, like there's some unhealthy relationship between the athlete experience and the role the parent plays in that. But there are some things I think we could do better as coaches that would help the parent. I think one is just putting yourself in their shoes for a second. You know, I know that I've coached in, I don't know, 600, 700, 800 college basketball games, and I never get as nervous coaching a college basketball game as I do watching one of my kids' games. Because to some degree, it's out of my control, and I just want my kid to have a good experience, and I want him to do well, and I want him, you know, all of those things. And so, first of all, I think parent or coaches acknowledging that parents do have a level of like angst about them. Like, this is the person they love more than anything in the whole world, and they want that experience to be good. Now, look, for me, because I'm a coach, I think I have a healthy relationship with it. Like, what do I want for my child? I want my child to be believed in and uplifted. I want them to build self-confidence. I want them to learn how to give their best effort. I want them to learn how to be a great teammate. I want this to be a great social interaction for them. I want things that are really good for them. I don't necessarily want my kid to score 20 or play all the minutes of the game or whatever. And that's where I think the relationship becomes unhealthy, is when a parent attaches all of the learnings that come from the game of basketball to actually their child being successful, number of points, number of rebounds, number of minutes, whatever. That's where it becomes unhealthy. But I think it's healthy for a parent to want their kid to learn good life lessons through the game of basketball, whether it's adversity or whether it's something that's positive. Parents want that for their child, and I think that's okay. And I think coaches need to acknowledge that. I got some ideas on how coaches could do better at that here that I'll share in just a second. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that, first of all, Sam and Lisa. Like, do you think coaches miss that, miss the fact that, wow, this is actually somebody's child and, you know, there's things that they want for their child through the sport experience? Or do you think coaches are highly aware of that?
Yes and yes. I don't mean to be, you know, ambiguous here, but yeah, I think some coaches are hyper aware of it and some, you know, have no awareness. And I think that where it's missed is, again, when you're coaching a kid, where are the expectations lie? oftentimes your parent has a set of expectations, a coach has a set of expectations. Neither one has communicated to either party. And so right off the bat, you're on the wrong foot. But if a coach comes out of the gate saying, hey, this is how we run our program. This is why I coach. This is how we do certain things. Then it gets, the parent can decide and the player can decide. They're either on board with that or they're not. And I think that's right out of the gate. I hope I'm answering your question. I think that's where we miss.
Yeah, I would just add it. You're right, Sam. And there's coaches, just like any parent, who we all have our own lens, our own experiences that we're viewing this situation from, whether we're coaching, you know, coaching our team or watching our, you know, children play. There's your own lens, your own anxieties, your own frustrations. There's things that are going on in your life that I just think even a coach who, if they get questioned by a parent, they'll receive that differently just based on what they've experienced in the past. Maybe they're anxious. Maybe they're afraid they're going to get fired. Maybe they're trying to win and that's the most important thing. And so they get defensive. And instead of building relationships, we, you know, tear down bridges between coaches and parents because just as a person, we're not ready to have some of those hard conversations. Or maybe we haven't, like you said, set expectations so that there aren't as many disappointments in the experience because we said, hey, this is why we're coaching. And then you can level set. And I think hopefully start on the right foot and build a actual relationship that helps you navigate some of those tough things that are going to happen in sports. But as people, we just have to recognize where we're at and what we need to work on, whether we're the coach or the parent.
And I would say too, Lisa and TJ, this is an encouragement to coaches. I'm mentoring this younger coach right now who wants to take over this program. And sometimes you communicate everything on, like as a coach, you do such a great job of communicating to parents. You outline all the boundaries, the expectations. You're fully invested in a child's development. And still, it's not good enough for a parent, because their daughter or their son isn't playing enough, or their role isn't big enough, or they're just very difficult to please. And I think as a coach, there's a weird thing where you have to recognize, like, put your best foot forward, be all in, do all these things, and also know that it may not please everybody. And that, and when, you know, so you just have to be aware of that thing as a coach.
You know, there's this interesting dynamic that I think that people don't pay much attention to, but I think it's really important to pay attention to. You know, as a parent, when you're watching your child play, if we're being honest, 95% of your thought is on your child when they're in the game, when they're in the, what, you know, right. And from the coach, they're trying to coach 15 players and there's thoughts about every kid, you know, break that evenly up. You know, and then on top of that, they're thinking offense and defense, maybe 7-8% of their thoughts actually going to that individual, because they're thinking about every individual. They're thinking about the game. They're thinking about all the things that go into coaching. And so it's disproportionate from the very beginning, like the amount of time that the parent's thinking about that particular player and the amount of time that coach is thinking about that player. And here's where I think it goes wrong, because I think both people are right. Like, I do think that each and every individual matters, and developing each and every individual matters. But the flip side of it is right, too. There is a coach that has to concentrate on the team and the team first and put the team ahead of everything that goes into coaching. And those two things conflict each other on a regular basis. And I've had that experience with one of my own, you know, children, too. Actually, both of my children. I think probably all of us as parents have had that experience, is that you know your child and you know what they're thinking and the way they react and what they might mean by certain reactions, whatever. And a coach has 15 players that might react to something completely different. So that coach might talk about something around playing time, and one kid might nod their head and be like, I agree. And one kid might be stoic, even though they fully agree. And another kid, you know, like, everybody can have a different reaction. But as coaches, we probably kind of, like the love languages, take and receive other people's actions the way that we would give them. You know, if our typical reaction is to just be stoic, then it might not bother us that a kid's stoic and we say something. But if we expect somebody to react with a head nod and a smile or whatever, then we think that somebody not doing that sends another message. And there's just so much that can be read into that. So it leads me into this, like, what can we do as a coach to ensure that we really understand, reach, and impact kids at the most highest level we possibly can? And I want to start really quickly. I want to get your ideas, but I want to start quickly with a story that has impacted me my entire life. There was a young lady at a PGC session, and I was probably 27, 20. I was a young coach, and I think I had a 1 and a 2-year-old at the time. And this young lady was struggling. She was homesick. She didn't want to be there. A whole bunch of different things went into it. We spent time over the course of the week. She really grew into it. She poured herself into the session. She had a great experience. And this gentleman, who was actually a famous person that I won't share their name, but if I shared who they were and what they created, everyone would be like, wow, you know, I know exactly who created that. But he came up to me after the session. And he bought me a bottle of wine, and a very expensive bottle of wine, and said, hey, I want you to have this. I said, ah, it's okay, I'm traveling. And he said, I really want you to have some sort of gift. Is there something I can give you? I said, no gift necessary. Like, I love what I do, enjoy it. And he said, well, let me tell you something. He said, when you're young, your heroes are going to be athletes. Your heroes are going to be musicians. Your heroes are going to be actors and actresses. But when you get older, your heroes are going to be the people that pour into your children. And he said, that's what you've done for me this week. And so that moment reminded me, and really it was a pivotal moment in my career where I realized I had an opportunity to really impact people's lives and occasionally maybe even be a hero in the story, where you got to really make a difference in somebody's life. Well, if I didn't know her and I didn't get to know her during that time, then I might have just thought, well, you know, listen, she's young, she's been sheltered, she's been baby, she hadn't been away from home, is probably not going to make it this week. Let me move on to the next athlete. And I think that's a typical response, you know, of people. But when you can look at that person like they're your own child, you look at them differently, and then you want to help them through something. And I think that's where coaches, we get this time suck where it's really difficult because we're so busy with time. We don't have time to do this. We don't have time to do that. We don't have time for each individual child. We go through this, and we're not intentionally being bad coaches. We're just very busy, and we don't always take the time to know what each individual actually needs over the course of that. And I understand why, because we're so busy with our team. Love to get y'all's thoughts on how do we marry those two things as coaches? Like, how do we actually get to know each individual, pour into each individual, and still manage the team?
Well, what came to mind, DJ, is just what the parent gets to see and hear and experience when they see you interact with their child, or what they've heard from their child. And I just, you know, even at the sixth grade level, coaching this year, I remember the times where I was talking to, you know, one of the little girls individually and just encouraging her and getting excited for her, even though she was number 9 and 10 on the team. But I could see the parents' eyes light up, just the appreciation, the smile afterwards, whether they were near or far, or maybe they came up after the game knowing that I had these conversations with their daughter. And even at the college level, like the parents that would just say thank you. And I've seen that firsthand. And I just think that the relationships with the individual players, as you get to know them, as much as they're genuine and as much as you can invest, I think that just goes a long way. Because even when you have to have a difficult conversation with a parent, you can come from the side of, hey, I've done the work. I have this relationship. I've built this trust. And the parents can't, you know, they can respect that. And I think it comes too from, instead of, I think a lot of coaches can make the mistake of in the beginning of the seeing, being like, I'm going to set the tone with parents and I'm going to set up these expectations and guardrails so that the parents aren't going to ruin my program. And it's just very much putting up a wall rather than, yeah, setting the tone of, hey, this is how we're going to communicate, and being very confident in your ability to do that, but not putting up a you over there, us over here sort of thing. I think, like you said, TJ, whether we like it or not, they're part of our program.
Yeah, Lisa, and I think that's where it's probably shifted in the last 10, 15 years, where I think in the old school approaches, it was that way. And I guess a coach can stay that way if they choose to, but you probably are setting yourself up some for heartache and heartburn and pain there if you do. And so, yeah, going back to, I think, what we said, which is building you know, putting our arms together and saying, how do we do this? How do we better serve? And TJ, your story, it triggered a thought for me, which is, you know, I'd like to think I've always had empathy. I've always strive to be a transformational coach. I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, I've gained a lot of more empathy. I've gained a lot more grace, a lot less judgment because of my own kids and seeing them in athletics or challenges in their own personal life. And so when I coach a kid, for the most part, over the last few years, it's really, I think I source it from a place, man, this is somebody's child. And when you do that, I think it allows you to navigate those challenges rather than like, you know, double down on intensity and demands and all that. It's more like double down on curiosity and seek to understand more and less for them to understand me. I fail at it. Let me be very clear. I fail at this at times, but I'm saying that to say, to turn it back to coaches listening, don't make the mistake I made. Like if you can just learn to understand your players better and what they're going through. And it doesn't mean it's like this kumbaya, everybody sit in a circle and share our feelings. That can be what it is. You can challenge them and hold them accountable while also being super empathetic and understanding. I think, again, that's a theme I hope coaches and I hope myself strive for.
And I think a pretty good way to think about this is whether you're a transactional or transformational coach. I think it's really easy for a transactional coach to say, I'm not responsible for all of those things. I'm just here to coach basketball. I'm just here to put them in their role. You know, they just got to do this and do that. Everybody's got to do this. Everyone's got to play hard. Everyone's got to. And then I'm not responsible for their feelings. I'm not responsible for their reaction to what I teach or do. Like that's just what their job is. They're a part of a team. And I do think there's a lot of coaches out there that look at that and say, you know, it's not my role to do all of these things. And then I think there's another group of coaches out there that's pretty transformational that say, you know what, listen, basketball is a vessel for me to be able to make an impact and a difference while I love winning and competing. And I'm going to go after that just as hard as the transactional coaches. There's more to this game. There's more to coaching. And you try and put yourself into those. But even for the transformational coach, Sam, like you just alluded to, there's still growth to be had there. I mean, a transformational coach might start out just by being a little bit more positive, right? But there's still levels of that transformation, like going all the way to actually knowing an athlete and what makes them tick and how they feel and what they're emotionally going through. And like, and I think that's what you're talking about, that you've become even more, you've probably always been a transformational coach as long as I've known you, but you've become more of a transformational coach as you've learned, growing and better understood. And especially one of those things that I think that is pivotal to all of us is when you actually have kids in that situation, you see it differently than when you didn't have kids. You were transformational before you had kids, but it even grew your transformation when you had kids that got into those situations. And so, you know, I think it's really important for every coach to kind of start with why, like, why do you coach? Because you're not really going to care about a kid's story and how they react to different situations if you're a transactional coach. That's just end of story. So you're going to make a decision. Do I want to become transformational? And if you are transformational, you're going to have to make a decision of like, how do I continue to grow in transformation as a coach where I can have more impact? You know, because just making the decision to be transformational, you're probably going to have impact. But the decision to actually continue to grow and your ability to transform, that's a lifelong journey that you can continually get better at and you can become more transformational. Let's transition here for a second, Lisa and Sam. Talk about solutions. So what are the things that we can do to actually make this better for coaches and for parents? And so, Sam, why don't you kick us off? Because I think, you know, many of your first 4 points were actually solutions to this, like things that you could do to make for better transformational coaching, better relationship with parents, and better growth for the child. So knock off a couple of those, and then I've got maybe one or two additional ones to add. And Lisa, I want to get your thoughts on ones that you'd add to it. Go ahead, Sam.
Okay, yeah. All right. And TJ, I think it's important real quick to say why we're even doing this show right now. Like we've had really good coaching friends leave the profession who are transformational coaches because the parent issue became too big and such a pain point, or they got run out, or whatever those reasons. And so We do. We want to offer solutions, ideas, thought-provoking things for them to be more successful with parents. So again, first thing back to the solution is, hey, we're in this together. And keeping, if you imagine a triangle and you have player, parent, and coach, the player's at the top of the triangle, and the parent and the coach, we should be working and making it about the player. And so keep that in mind first. Number two is boundaries. And Lisa, you alluded to this a moment ago and pushed back on what I'm about to say, but boundaries are there to protect people. And for example, a story, one of our BCB coaches a few weeks ago got approached by a parent on a Sunday after a tournament, and they were upset with playing time and this sort of thing. And so enroll on the team. And we do have a policy in place, like never talk about it right after a game. But we're also humans. We're also relational. We also care. And so our coach is really mature in these situations, really good. And they kind of went against their own, against our system or our policy. And it ended up escalating and getting a little out of hand in this conversation. Nothing physical or anything like that, but it just got emotional. And thankfully, you know, 24 hours later, they both kind of apologized. They both found some common ground. But you put them in place, boundaries, that is, to protect against the emotion of the moment. And that's one example. We could talk about 16 boundaries, but put systems in place to protect the moment or protect the emotions of any moment. So that's the why behind it, which leads into the third thing. Yeah, have why behind everything you do. Don't just do it because your high school coach did it or because you heard this YouTube video. Know why you do it as a coach. And then lastly, I think carefully, you can say this as a coach where you're not getting up and talking to your parents like you're the expert, but more like you're just providing information and stats. And then it's not my way or the highway, but it's like, hey, this is at Emmanuel College. This is how we run our program. And this is what we do. And it doesn't mean you have to do it this way, but if you're a part of our program, this is what we expect. And so you don't have to be my way or the highway, but also say, hey, at Austin High School here in Texas, this is what we do. And I just want y'all to be really clear on that.
So Sam, just to go back to your comment about the boundaries and kind of referencing what I had said previously, I agree. I think having them, I think it's correct. It's the way in which you set them, the tone of which you set them. Is that tone underlying like a big wall that you're putting between the two? Or is the tone of, hey, this is how we're going to make it work for both of us as a team, as a program, so that we can have the most productive conversations and meetings or you know, work through some issues. But as they come up, this is how we're going to do it. This is the boundaries or expectations we're going to have. I think that can be super healthy. And like you said, just protect the moments, especially that might be more emotional. But I would just add to potential solutions is making sure you're on the same page with your administrators or making, you know, connections within your community or your program. I think like you're talking about, Sam, referencing BCB, all your coaches can be on the same page. Like, here's our policy. We're in this together. So you can't go to assistant coach A, B, or C. You know, we're all, you know, executing and believing in what we're doing here and this and the why behind it. And then so do that with your administrative. Make sure that, you know, an AD can help you and support you, that you're on the same page with your whys and, you know, how you're doing things. Maybe you have a group of coaches at your school. You know, if I think a healthy athletic department has, you know, a community of coaches so that you can rely on each other. When things get tough, you have somebody to lean on either. And people on your staff also need to be on the same page. I think assistant coaches can help with these relationships and they can also hurt in these relationships. So you just have to be proactive with that, especially depending on the experience that you have on your staff and your assistants. And then also with that, maybe you're also getting on the same page with teachers, whatever community that you can create that will help you. I think that support system is not only good for any parent situations, but just in your coaching overall. I think that builds community and it builds trust with everybody.
Yeah, I think all of those things are really good. I think that here's the final two thoughts that I've got on this. One is just an additional thing that maybe you could do that would help with it. And then two is kind of just a wrap up idea that I'd love to see if y'all have anything to add to it. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we moved school systems, and there was a teacher, and it was a science teacher, and sent a letter home to us as parents and said, "Nobody knows your child better than you. What do I need to know about your child?" And I thought it was just phenomenal. I thought it was like, wow. And so, you know, my wife wrote like a 10-page essay back, and I was like, that might be a little bit much, right? But at the same time, it was really good, because our kids were transitioning, and somebody to have an eye on what we would actually see at home, be worried about. We were worried about relationships with friends, a new school, moving. We had just lost my dad, which was an emotional time for our kids. Like, there was just a lot going on in their lives. And the thought that a teacher would care to know all that and could look for that, one, was just really moving. Two, it was super helpful, because the feedback we got from the teacher throughout the course of the year is, you know, I think your child is doing well in this particular area. I haven't seen any signs of this. I have, like, wow. I mean, I just felt overwhelmed with gratitude that a teacher would care to do that, and that somebody was looking after our child. So my recommendation, and I've done this with parents at even at college, to ask them the same thing. What things do I need to know about your child? And it is really helpful. My child is generally quiet, or when they get in trouble, they tend to go in a shell, or when they go, like, just, I mean, any number of things. And if you were to ask me to write you a letter on all four of my children, it would be different. They all react to things differently, my own four children. So take 15 players and put them in a room. But I think it would be super helpful to send out that email at the very beginning. And if you wanted to get even more detailed about it, maybe questions that you think would serve you. How does your child react to adversity? How does your child react to being coached hard? How does your child, you know, whatever it is. I mean, whatever things you might think might fit you. But I think you would be a much better coach, and I would be a much better coach, if I really took the time to know each one of the players that I'm coaching. And we do a lot of that in our program. We do the DISC assessment, where we try and find out their personalities. And that was eye-opening to me. We do the love languages test, where we try and find out how they receive love. That was eye-opening to me. All of those things help me way better understand the people that I'm coaching. And I think those things could help, you know, bridge a gap between parents and players. So that's just one additional idea. And then my second thing would be kind of a summation of everything that we've talked about here, is that you need a plan. Your plan doesn't need to be the same as Sam's or Lisa's, but I think you do need a plan. And Sam alluded to that, like, hey, maybe I'm going to tell parents that you're going to get a weekly newsletter from me, or maybe it's monthly, or maybe it's whatever. I'm going to meet with the parent and the child before the season and mid-season for 15 minutes. If there is a problem with playing time, this is how you handle it. If there's a problem with whatever, and I'm sure over the years, your little blueprint or handbook of how you're going to handle parents will change. But as a parent, I feel super confident when I know all of those things going into it. If you say practice is going to be over at 5:30 and I'm there to get my kid, it's frustrating if they don't get out of the gym till 6:15. You know, I've been sitting there, I've got to go cook dinner. We've got to get, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that go on. The more precise you can be with parents and the more they can be in the know, I do think the better those relationships will go. So I would encourage coaches to build a plan on how you're actually going to deal with parents. And I shouldn't say, you know, handle parents, because Chad Warner has a great quote that Jim Herrick shared, you know, we handle animals, not people, right? So we're not handling them, but how do we build good relationships, good communication with them? And then, you know, year after year, 5 years from now, you could probably have a really solid handbook on parent-coach relationship as you continue to adjust that over the years. So that was my final two thoughts on that. Sam, Lisa, any more thoughts on parents and relationships with parents?
Well, I just had your story you shared reminded me of a parent telling me for the sixth graders how much they were really, really wanted their daughter to be more aggressive. And so I went into my first practice, and it didn't take me long to realize I didn't need to focus on her being more aggressive. She just needed more reps and more time in the game of basketball so that she'd become more confident and then therefore more aggressive in the game. And I think that parents, like when you ask them, what do I need to know? You also have to filter out, you know, what's best for the team. And not trying to find a solution for each child. When he said the focus is on the team and moving everybody forward, you can't please everybody. And I think for my personality, I think as a coach to know yourself, because I go home thinking about the one parent or the one kid that's unhappy. And some coaches go home thinking, well, if two people are happy, I'm sweet. And so you just have to pause and recognize, you know, the burden that you're placing on yourself to make everybody happy unnecessarily, and just know your principles and improve on them and build the relationships, because, it's a journey, you know, and different people come in and out of your program for a reason, and you have an opportunity to make an impact, but it doesn't mean that everybody's, you know, going to be smiling every single practice after every single game. You know, that's just part of growing through that adversity.
Yeah. And coaching's hard. Most of you that are listening are probably underpaid and over demanded on all the things that you have to do. And this has been one of those things that I think is just pushing coaches over the edge a little bit, because in the last several years, 5, 10, 15 years, this has just become more of the job, more of what you have to do. And most of you probably got into coaching basketball because you wanted to coach basketball and you wanted to make an impact. And now you're having to deal with things, you know, a little bit differently than you had to 5, 10 or 15 years ago. So coaches, I think it's really important, you know, that we're in this battle with you. We recognize what you're dealing with, and we recognize how hard that can be, and that we all need better tools all of the time to become a better and more transformational coach. But we're appreciative and we're thankful for what you do. And thanks for joining us for the episode. Hit us up at Hardwood_hustle if you got any thoughts or ideas, or maybe things you've done with parents before that were really impactful for your program that we can share with coaches. We'd love to just empower coaches in a way that make these relationships stronger and healthier. So, hey, she is Lisa, he is Sam, and I am TJ, and we are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We'd also love for you to join us at one of our fall PGC coaching clinics or Read and React workshops. We have 6 locations to choose from. Go to pgcclinics.com for more information. That's pgcclinics.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.